This is Audible.
I was 10th of 11. I just slid out. I was home from the hospital before my mom was. I was at the door. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Mom. My mom would hate that joke. Louie, that's bad. Funny though, right, Ma?
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Hey Mom, Stories for My Mother, but you can read them too. By Louis Anderson with Andrew Postman. Read by Louis Anderson.
I'm your mother. Do you know what that means? Does it mean anything to you? Christine Baskets. April 2015. It's about time. Hey, Mom. I already talked to you a lot, but lately I've been speaking to you directly, too. So I figured it was time I wrote. I often wonder what you're doing. Is there an afterlife? Heaven? That's a million-dollar question. Or billion-dollar question. Or in this day and age, I guess it's a trillion-dollar question. A million's not even a million anymore. A million was really a million back in your day, Mom. I could say I'm writing now to tell you about this great role I got in a great TV show, which just got picked up, by the way, in which I play a mom. That's right, mom, a mom, not a dad, of four grown sons. And the character is so much like you. Her name is Christine Baskets. And playing her comes so naturally because I keep channeling you. What would Mom say? What would Mom do? What would Orizella do? So I wanted to let the inspiration for that character know about it, even if she died a quarter century ago. But that's not the only reason I feel a need to write. I have so many questions, so many things I've been meaning to say to you, stuff that's on my mind a lot, and I wanted to get it down someplace. There were questions I neglected to ask Dad when he was still around, but that's easier to explain. There were so many things he wouldn't talk about. He was angry, an angry alcoholic. Sometimes I just didn't want to be around him, and neither did any of your other 10 children. But why didn't I ask you the things I want to ask you now, back when I had the chance? You had no trouble talking, Mom. Blah, 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 Dad said many times about your going on and on. I'm so much more like you than him in that way. You never yelled or punished or expressed disappointment, only love. Sometimes I wish you'd been harder, more disapproving. Maybe you were and I didn't notice. Anyway, it kills me that I didn't ask you a bunch of things that I think about more and more these days. I often think about childhood and our family and the things that make us who we are. I've always thought about this stuff, you know this, Mom. But so much of my comedy act over the years has been based on our family, and you, and what growing up was like. That was a lot of my best material, still is. As a young comic, I mostly made fat jokes at my own expense. Or maybe I should say, I did lots of fat jokes about this fat character I played on stage. Though, I played a fat person off stage, too. That was the common denominator. But it's come to be less of my act. Maybe it's because I don't see myself anymore as a fat person, but as a person who happens to be fat. Anyway, you were still around when I was doing material about family, and it always got laughs, but then I got a little darker and maybe a little more real with it, and got some of the biggest laughs of my set. A different kind of laugh. It opened me up and I started digging. Roman Decaire, an older comedian I admired and who saw me perform, told me, Louis, if you do that material about your family and have a completely clean act, you'll be famous. I lacked direction then, and I was looking for someone to tell me something. He turned out to be 100% right. Decades later, Mom, I make jokes about the family, and they land, and land hard, because They're so true for everyone. Though, I still think our family was more screwed up than most. A stress test, you know what that is? It's where you have your whole family over to the house. Stuff like that often gets the most unguarded laugh of the night. So here I am, Mom, on the verge of basically playing you for a national TV audience, with the pursed lips, the disapproving judgmental glances in the nicest way that I picked up from you. You know that side glance that could say a million things? Don't do that. Put that down. What are you doing? Don't make us look bad. Oh, Louie. That's there. Yet even though I understand some things about you and me, I want to understand more. Which brings me to tonight, Sunday night, this hotel suite desk in room 117. 11 and 7, two good numbers if you're from Las Vegas, Mom, which is where I now live. Of the Hilton Garden Inn in Erie, Pennsylvania, having just come from finishing my 6th show in 4 days. One show Thursday night, two each Friday and Saturday nights, and tonight's. My 58th comedy set of the year. I'm writing to tell you about how it's going and keeping you even more alive with me. I have so much to report about so many things, some good stuff, some not so good. But it's a lot, and who knows, maybe one day it'll turn into a book. If it does, I know what I want to call it. Hey, Mom, because so many times since you've been gone, I've looked up and said out loud, "Hey, Mom, what do you think of this? Hey, Mom, get a load of this guy. Hey, Mom, how'd I get into this mess? Hey, Mom, what am I doing with my life?" I think we all do a subconscious "Hey, Mom" a lot of the time. I guess I must believe in the afterlife if I'm writing to you and I talk to you and my face is always turned up to the sky. If there is an afterlife, I hope there's a big comfortable chair because I know you like that, and good creamer for your coffee, and a TV showing old reruns. The last time I had a moment like this, where I absolutely needed to write down what was on my mind, was 1987, when I was touring the Midwest and doing Summerfest in Milwaukee. Thousands and thousands of people were taking in the different acts, drinking beer, eating bratwurst. When my set was over, I wanted to head back to the hotel, so I got a lift from a festival volunteer. I climbed into the back seat of the car, a Buick. Mom, you always loved Buick, such big, beautiful cars. All around us were so many drunks wobbling and staggering to their cars, then getting into their cars and trying to avoid hitting other drunks. My first thought was amazement at the inner gyroscope of drunks, how the alcohol takes over and they look like they're going to fall, but somehow they don't. Amazing! A lot of them, mostly men, made wrestling noises, like Ric Flair. But I had a bigger thought. The whole scene was a metaphor for my life. Me swerving and trying to avoid the damage that alcohol did to me, did to all of us, does to all kinds of people. That it did to you, Mom, though you yourself hated to drink. As soon as I got to the room at the Pfister Hotel, a beautiful old hotel in Milwaukee that's supposedly haunted, I sat down at the desk just like I'm doing here with you, and I wrote a letter to Dad. He was already 7 years dead at that point, and it all just spilled out of me. Letter after letter in my journal, and I kept writing and crying in search of some better understanding, any understanding, for why Lewis William Anderson was such a cruel, difficult alcoholic father. Those letters eventually got collected into a book, Dear Dad, Letters from an Adult Child, that you got to see, Mom, but just barely, because you died without warning a few months later. Like I said, so much has happened since then, and I want to keep you up to date. I wish you had seen the professional success I've enjoyed in the 25 years since you died. You deserve a lot of the credit, partially because of how much I talk about you and the family in my act, partly because of the reservoir of love and kindness you doled out to me and all of us, which gave me the strength not to quit, because you never quit, you never gave up, you never gave in. Always put one foot in front of the other. In a couple of years, it'll be 40 years for me as a stand-up comic. A clown, really. But a clown who's making good money. Can you believe that, Mom? 40! Anyway, I could not have gotten this far in my career if I gave up easily. Dad was also stubborn. All of us Andersons are. We won't give in. We won't give up. We won't even take care of ourselves. There's a lot of things I wish. I wish I would have had you come and live with me later in life. I wish I would have been more open to the idea. I know you would have adored that. I would have too eventually. I was selfish then, much more than I think, I hope I am now. I wish I would have done it, and I'm glad to say it here even though I know it's too late. I also know we have to let go of regrets, or it drags us through the mud for all the things we didn't do. I need to tell you about the family, but it's late and I'm wiped out from the show. So I'll say goodnight for now. I'll write tomorrow. Love, Louie. Gone but never forgotten. Hey, Mom. So there are 5 Anderson kids left, Mom, which I'm sorry to say means that 6 of us have passed away since you left us. Or maybe you know that. Are things getting more complete up there, wherever you are, as each of your children joins you? Or does each one make you sadder because they've left us here? That's how you were, Mom. You would have thought of us, not yourself. Will it only be complete when we're all up there, Mom? I hope there's no fighting up there. I hope there's enough butter. I hope there's enough love. Enough love? That's a strange idea. A mistaken idea. Love's a constant. That's a hard lesson to learn. And here's a small thing. Do I even believe the stuff about the afterlife or heaven? Or is it just that I want to? Those of us still here, Jimmy, Shanna, Lisa, and Tommy, and me, are very close. We don't see each other as much as we should, but we're close. I live in Vegas, Mom. I know you always like Vegas, the buffets, the big hotels, the free giveaways, Mom. Coming to town with 2 suitcases, one of them empty, and leaving with both full. And my remaining 2 sisters and 2 brothers live in the Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and South Dakota. I visit Minnesota 10 or 12 times a year. Altogether, there are more than 50 Anderson nephews and nieces, great-nephews and nieces, and great-great-nephews and nieces. I really should get an exact count. Fortunately, a lot of them have escaped the family curse. But DNA runs deep, and more than a few have been through drug abuse and other addictions. Can you believe that's 2015, Mom? That used to sound like a year from science fiction. 2015 and beyond. But here we are. Can you believe I'm still alive considering all the crap I've done, the risks I've taken, the lifestyle I've lived? Things are really different now, Mom. You'd be so thrilled and also so damn disappointed, especially with how people treat each other. Am I jumping around too much in my letter? It's no different from when we used to talk, you and me. The mind wanders when it's never totally satisfied, but I guess that's kind of self-evident, right? At some point, I'll write you about the day you died, though I don't even know if you'd want to hear it. But I will get to it. I'm finding new reservoirs of strength. I really love you and miss you and wish I would have been nicer to you. Did I say that yesterday? Does everyone say that they wish they were nicer to their mom or dad after it's too late? I hope everyone remembers to call their mom and dad and say, I love you, because you never know. When I would call and do that with Dad, he wouldn't respond to me. He would just yell, what the hell's going on? He's saying he loves me, and he loves you. Get on the phone, find out if he's in jail. Everyone should tell the people they love that they love them, at all times, because you never know. You always said that, Mom. You never know. I wish you were alive right now, no matter how old you'd be. I just turned 50 12 years ago. No, I don't like saying my age. I got your vain streak. I wish I would have got more of your nice streak because you were the nicest person I ever met or knew. I got more of Dad's mean streak than I'd like to. His sneer and judgmental way, though I've worked on that a lot. I hate that guy, he'd say. But you don't even know the guy, I'd say. I don't have to know someone, Louie, to hate him. I was going to say I also got Dad's addictive personality, but maybe it's yours too, Mom, because I know you love food. I've had trouble with drinking, drugs, gambling, and especially food. I've survived the drugs, the gambling, and the drinking. I quit smoking 15 years ago, but I'm still working on the food. Oh, yeah, I'm addicted to laughs and applause, too. I love them. No calories, yet very filling, Mom. The better the show, the less I eat afterwards. True. I'm looking forward to playing you more on TV. It'll be a treat, and I know you'd get a big kick out of it. I'll try to write again tomorrow. Night, Mom. Love, Louie. P.S. Say hi to Kent, Rhea, Roger, Mary, Sheila, Billy. Say hi to Dad if he's up there. I hope there's no drinking up there, Mom. Tenth child. Hey, Mom. It's me again, your tenth child, Louie, Louis Perry Anderson. As it states on my birth certificate, born March 24, 1953 at Anchor Hospital in St. Paul, Minnesota. Fatty Arbuckle's birthday. I didn't know that then because I was just a baby. You and Dad named me Louis after Dad, right? I mean, I'm not a junior because his and my middle names are different. But here's what I don't get. Why wait until your 10th kid and your 5th son before using Dad's name? Why not the firstborn male? Why 18 years after you first became parents? I know my middle name is for your brother, Mom. You always talk so lovingly about Perry, Perry Prouty. I bet he got tortured over that name. Here's the question people always ask me. What does it mean to be the number 10 of 11, with 9 older brothers and sisters and just one younger? Is there something particular about a family of 11 children? Some 11-ness, like Robert Kennedy Jr. is one of 11, Stephen Colbert, so is Mel Gibson. Do we all have something in common beyond just the number? I wonder if there's something similar between RFK Jr., Mel Gibson, Stephen Colbert, and me. I'm funny. Stephen Colbert is funny. Is Mel Gibson funny? Is RFK Jr. funny? Do we tenthborns have any special tendencies the way the firstborns might? Or the baby of the family does? Or the middle of 3? Or an only child? Does birth order matter that much? I have a book at home that's all about birth order, titled What Else? The Birth Order Book by Dr. Kevin Lehman. The subtitle is Why You Are the Way You Are. Is it that black and white? Does birth order determine everything? What number kid is it that never finishes reading books? I always wondered if being your 10th mom meant it was really hard for me to come across as special. You were 41 years old, you had me. Like so many moms back then, you got a week in the hospital, and having babies was your only real vacation. No wonder you had so many. I'm glad I could give you that break. But it was the 10th such vacation, with 9 children already. Could number 10 really seem special? I know when I see something over and over how it affects me. Oh, another open mic comic. I've seen this before. The 10th baby? Probably it was like that for you and Dad. Another mouth to feed. Another round of diapers to change. Another soft, cherubic crying thing to hold in comfort. More money to earn and immediately spend. It must have been chaos at 1122 Hazelwood Street, the Roosevelt Projects on the east side of St. Paul, Minnesota, before I showed up. And even more chaos afterward. So could I have really been special in some way? After all, not every comic is special. Brave, sure, and I have lots of respect for what each comic is trying to do, but special? Most aren't. Wait, is that me being judgmental? I don't need to see that comic to know he's not special. Eventually someone comes along who is special. Like the first time I saw Jim Carrey. Wow. I remember thinking, that's going to be a hard act to follow on stage. At home, I had 9 acts to follow. The only act that followed me was Tommy. I really wish I would have asked you and Dad how it felt to bring home number 10. When fans or interviewers ask, what is it like growing up with 10 brothers and sisters? I never know how to answer it. By the time I arrived, the older ones were close to leaving the nest and very busy with their lives outside the home. There was that thing with Mary, and a decade later with Shanna, so not all of them were even there. The middle kids helped take care of us younger ones, so to me and Tommy, the middle kids were the older kids, and the older kids were really adults. What was it like growing up in a family that big? I had lots of examples of how to act, good and bad. We only had 6 chairs at the table, so we ate in shifts. There were 2 bathrooms, so we learned to control our bladders. The socks we wore were probably not ours. Every family's circumstances are different. And I'm sure very big families are the same in some ways. I wonder if Tolstoy is right, that happy families are happy in the same way, but unhappy families are each unhappy in their own way. Oh, man, I would hate to have to figure that out. I knew we had a lot of unhappiness, but were we unhappy in a unique way or in a very similar way to other big families? I asked too many damn questions. Anyway, Lisa probably said it best. We made our own happiness, but I don't think we were a happy family. What were the reactions of Kent, Rhea, Mary, Roger, Jimmy, Shanna, Billy, Sheila, and Lisa to the 10-pound sack of potatoes carried into the Anderson Hacienda that March of 1953? I'm going to make some calls to 3 of my 4 remaining siblings, Mom, to get their impressions, but not Tommy, because he wasn't born yet. But I'll call him anyways to say hi to my baby brother and tell him I love him. 4 siblings, yep, it's sad to say it. Jimmy, Shanna, Lisa, and Tommy. I have more to tell you about Kent, Rhea, Mary, Roger, Billy, and Sheila being gone, Mom. But later, not now. Just writing those words gets me emotional. To be continued. Love, Louie. Premiere. Hey, Mom. I called Jimmy your favorite child. Just admit it. He is. And asked him what he thought of me when I came home from the hospital. I was excited. I didn't know why, he said. Jimmy gets excited about everything. He always looks on the bright side. I don't know if he happens to be the best combination of you and Dad, or he just arrived at the right time, or if it's birth order, or he's sunny side up, and I'm more of a hard-boiled egg. Anyway, that's Jimmy, pure and sweet, a sweetness he got from you, though he's also got a side of Dad's sour sauce. Then I called Lisa, but she didn't pick up. Then I called Shanna to see if she was even around when I was brought home from the hospital. Maybe she wasn't. Maybe she was. That was years after you and Dad gave her away to be raised in a whole other state. Shanna didn't pick up, so I left her a message on her voicemail. Hey, Mom, Shanna's living in your hometown of Mitchell, South Dakota, home of the Corn Palace, where you and Dad met. I think you know why she ended up back there. Then Lisa called back, and she remembers me coming home, and she was super excited to see me, so excited that you let her hold me, and then she dropped me on my head. What? Well, that explains everything, doesn't it, Mom? Dropped on the head. I didn't have a chance. Being dropped on my head as a baby could explain my becoming a comedian. What's the right recipe for producing comedians? Is it nice moms and mean dads? Mean moms and nice dads. Is that how you make the best comedians? I did a joke about the difference between moms and dads waking up their kids in the morning for school. Moms are usually so gentle and nice, even musical, sweetly letting you sink yourself into your bed because they seem so content to say your name 700 or 800 times. Louie, oh, Louie, Louie, there's bacon and eggs, Louie. Louie, get up, everyone's waiting for you, Louie. I even have orange juice. Remember, Mom, how we couldn't always afford orange juice? Louie, get up, please get up, Louie. Louie, I know you can hear me, Louie. Louie, sweetie. Dads usually fire a warning shot or two. Rise or shine, hit the showers, then hit the road. Get up, or your ass is grass. Wake up, damn it! Seriously, Mom, I really do wish I knew what you and Dad thought of me when I entered this mad, mad, often really mean world. Love, hard-headed Louie. birthday girl. Hey, Mom. It's May 27th. Happy birthday! I won't say how old you'd be now, because you never like that. Who does after 30? Sorry, Mom, I actually do need to share it. If I show these letters to anyone, they'll want to know. You were born in Mitchell, South Dakota, 103 years ago in 1912. I just looked up the Argus Leader, the newspaper from nearby Sioux Falls, and that day it was in the mid-70s to low 80s. There were still front-page stories about the Titanic, which had sunk exactly 6 weeks earlier. William Howard Taft was president, our fattest at 350 pounds. You couldn't have been an easy birth because you were like a 12-pound baby and your mom was such a tiny woman. That could explain the look on her face in those photographs. I wonder what your dad, Charlie, was doing when you were born. Was he at your mother's bedside squeezing her hand or at one of his gas stations he owned? What was he like? Like Roger, like me, like Dad, somehow? Maybe I'll call Aunt Shirley about the details. I never understood why we called her Aunt Shirley, because she's a cousin. I should ask Aunt Shirley why we call her Aunt Shirley. Who came up with your name? Orizella, that's a beauty, isn't it? It wasn't a very popular name. I looked it up. The top five girl names in 1912 were Mary, Helen, Dorothy, Margaret, and Ruth. There are lots of names in the top 100 that year that you almost never hear of anymore. Edna, number 16, Bertha, number 36, Fanny, number 87, Velma, number 88, but no Auras or Zellas among them. By the way, Mom, the top five girl names this year, 2015, are Sophia, Emma, Olivia, Ava, and Mia. Don't they sound like names from the past? Did you know anyone with the name Aura? Did you like having an unusual name? What did they call you in school or at home? I know Dad had a Scandinavian background, Swedish and Norwegian, and his childhood was so much more broken than yours. When his older sister Olga babysat while their parents were away, and then threw a party, and a local Swedish gang showed up, uninvited, and killed someone, it was hard to blame the authorities for treating Dad's parents as unfit guardians, which led to the sad path his life took. But do you think it would have been so different without that misfortune? I don't know. No one does. You, on the other hand, had a pretty good childhood. Your people go all the way back to the Mayflower. How big was that boat anyway? You came from the Windsors, a prestigious name in British history. Do you know where your ancestors migrated to and when? Did they hang out in Massachusetts for a while? Are you curious how they ended up in South Dakota? I know you were born in Mitchell, South Dakota, in comfortable circumstances to a mother and father you called very loving parents. Your dad, Charles Prouty, owned filling stations, and you got to run the candy and cigarette stands. Al Capone once pulled into one of the stations in a big, beautiful Packard, you told me, and gave the kid working the pump a $20 tip. During the Depression, your dad extended credit to lots of customers, but when the worst of it was over, many of them didn't pay him back. It broke his business, then his heart. I also heard growing up about how your dad got cheated out of some of his stations by a crooked lawyer. So I'm confused, Mom. Did he die of a stroke, or, as I heard sometimes, as you often said, a broken heart? If it was a broken heart, was it from the disappointment in his customers and the flaws of human nature, or because he got swindled? Or was the stroke the result of some other despair? Even though he experienced disappointment in his financial and professional life, I wonder if it couldn't have been offset by the love he gave to his wife and children, and that they gave to him. Maybe Charles Prouty didn't see that as equal trade. I know you learned how to drive a car at age 13 and that your dad got you a 1929 Buick, making you the only girl in town with her own car. How cool. Did that make you popular, Mom? Were you the most popular girl at school because you had your own car and your dad treated you like a queen? What was it like to be a popular teen? Good? I bet really good. I wasn't the least popular kid in school, but I wasn't the most popular for sure. And I was usually picked last for teams, especially kickball. Gym class was even less fun for me than most kids. When you're a fat kid, you don't want to take off your shirt. Swimming, ugh, forget it. But being the most popular, there's no way to go but down. Wherever we go in the world, there's very few most populars. And the rest of us have to share the crumbs left over from the baguette of life. That makes my mouth water, Mom, especially if there's a little dish of butter of life. So you were a girl in a small town, and Dad, my dad, was a trumpet player in a very successful band. His life was more dazzling, but you had the car, and you thought he liked you, at least your car. Did you ever go with Dad to his gigs? He must have been great to listen to, and even to be around. Was he the only one you saw up on stage? When did the heavy drinking start? Did you see flashes of it and just tell yourself it was manageable? Was there anything he could have done right then, as you guys fell madly in love during the Depression, that would have made you walk away? You never gave up on him. Why is that? Was it love for him or just some proudy sense of determination? See, Mom, so many questions, maybe too many. I'm so sorry now for those times I ever told you to shut up because you were going on and on, like on that 13-hour flight we took to Europe. Where do we get our strength from, Mom? From our parents, or do we have it all along inside us, and sometimes we just give others the credit for it, even though they have little or nothing to do with it? Boy, talk about people who need to shut up. Love, Louie. Training Day. Hey, Mom. On my flight today from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, they announced that they were training a pilot to become captain. Who trains moms, Mom? Is that their mothers? How was your mom, Bertha, as a mom? Bertha Prouty. I don't even know her middle name. That's terrible. I should know more. Was she as loving as you? I doubt it. I met her. She lived with us for a while. Why didn't I ask her everything? Think of how much I lost by not asking all the questions I wanted. When do we lose that tendency? Because as kids, we're constantly asking, what is this for? Why? Mom, how did that baby get in your stomach? What color is water? Do ants poop? Do ants name their children? Why can't you toast salad? Where did Grandpa go? Why do I sometimes get sad and start crying and don't know why? How? What? Why? Kids know instinctively that asking questions helps them. They may not know consciously, but they know that the answers will help them to understand the world and find their place in it, and handle disappointment and money and success and the flu and what to do with vegetable scraps and stale bread. Well, stale bread's easy. Just make stuffing with it or give it to your dad because he'll eat anything. A question I wish I'd asked you, Mom. What the hell were you thinking marrying Dad? Okay, I know. You got pregnant. Your parents weren't happy about it. You and Dad had to marry. That's what people did in the 1930s. Still, if you would have said that was the reason you married Dad, I probably would have interrupted to say he was such a difficult man. No. That's not true. I would have said he's such a freaking difficult man. But was he difficult back then? I remember once asking you, what did you see in him? I loved his curls, you said. He had beautiful, curly hair. I didn't comment on your answer, but I know what I would have said now. Oh, Mom, now I know where I get my shallowness from. Sure, Dad was handsome. You were beautiful. Your father owned a gas station. You had a car. And Dad wanted a ride. What I really should have asked you, what the hell were you thinking having 11 children? People should ask their parents everything. But parents should also tell their kids everything. Well, would they even listen, though? Did I listen? Ever questioning Louie? A dozen questions every person should ask their parent or parents while they still can. Number 1, was your childhood a fairy tale? a drama, or a horror film. Number two, what was your first thought when you two saw each other? Number three, why'd you marry each other? Out of necessity? Were you lonesome? Number four, what were you looking for in life? What did you feel you needed to do? Number five, what'd you already have, so you didn't need to look for it? Number six, if you could live a do-over, what would it be? Would you change yourself or other things about your life? Number seven, what's the best thing you ever did besides have me? Number eight, if you could do three things to change the world, what would they be? Number nine, if you could only have one meal, would it be breakfast, lunch, or dinner? Number 10, what characters in movies were your mom and dad most like? Number 11, how did you know what I would like so much? Number 12, tell me something you've never told anyone. Silent dancing. Hey, Mom. We did this thing that's pretty cool, I think. Remember silent dance parties where everyone on the dance floor wears headphones and listens to the same music and dances to it, but there's no music outside? Wait, no, actually you wouldn't. That's not even my generation. I don't know whose generation it is, the one after mine or the current one. Anyway, silent dance parties, I can hear Dad raising his voice. What the hell would they think of next, silent screaming? So that idea gave me this one. What if we transmitted the audio of one of my Vegas stand-up shows live to the local VA hospital and all the injured and recovering vets who want can listen to it on headphones? And there would be laughter throughout the building. I sure hope there would be laughter. They did it, Mom. We did it at the Las Vegas VA hospital. I wish I could have heard it, seen it myself, but I was on stage performing live while they were listening to it. Hey, Mom, if you tell a joke and no one's listening, does it mean it isn't funny? I'll get a chance to meet some of the vets next week when I go to the hospital for the meet and greet. We need to do more of that. I want to get other entertainers involved, too. I wish we made a better effort to treat all of our veterans like we do our loved ones. On second thought, given some families, that wouldn't be such a great idea. Love, the proud son of a war veteran, Louis. You and me. Hey, Mom, remember when we would venture out early Saturday morning to Flying Cloud Airport, just you and me for the flea market? Most times it was a quiet ride there with our packed boxes in the back of our big Buick. Sometimes it was a pleasant mother and son conversation. Once we fantasized that a rich antique dealer from California was going to stop by our booth of pottery, glassware, and jewelry, surveying the treasures, your word, junk, Dad's word. And then, with a magical sweep of his arm, the dealer would say, "I'll take it all." Then he'd unsnap his fancy alligator wallet and open it up to reveal a thick wad of hundreds to your amazement and my teenage giggles. "Wouldn't that be a nice break, Louis?" you'd say. And we could have really used one, especially after the previous night, like so many others we had with the maniac. The real flea market experience was never like that, of course. Not only did we not make a killing, we never made any money. You priced everything too high because you had no real intentions of selling. "Oh, that's not supposed to be out there," you'd say. "That's not for sale. I'm keeping that." Instead, while I unfolded our table and unpacked our boxes, you walked around the market buying things. Everybody knew you. Everybody liked you. You'd come back 10 minutes later with one or two or four items. "Look at this cruet, Louis. It's oil and vinegar cruet. It has a couple of chips on it, but for $2, how could I go wrong?" I was still unpacking, and we were already in the hole. That's not even including the gas it took to get down there. We always returned home with more than we'd come with. I realized much later it was not about selling. It was about us spending time together. Unsaid no more, Louis. daily prayer. Hey, Mom. I wasn't doing this back when you were around, but these days I start my day by praising God and praying for everybody I know. I ask for forgiveness for all those I've hurt. I want to be big-hearted, Mom. I learned that from you. You were always big-hearted toward Dad, despite all the things he did to you. You still forgave him, still loved him. Was that a defect in you or grace from God? Anyway, I try to start my day outside myself so I don't go crazy. I should honor something other than myself first. I find it's helpful. Sometimes I'll do my prayers before getting out of bed. Sometimes I'll make my bed first and then do my prayers. I'll say what I have to say out loud. Then I get ready for the day, the kind of place I need to be. If I know I'll be running in circles most of the day, it's good to prepare for that. Then again, it's never good to run in circles because you always end up right where you are. You should run in a direction that brings you in touch with a new way of life, a new world, new people. So many people today run in circles, Mom, more than they used to, it seems. I don't want to be like that. Maybe I'll start running in ovals. I don't know if it's right to pray for things like professional success. Maybe it's the opposite of honoring something besides yourself. But now and then, I confess, I've prayed for work that is really, truly fulfilling. Not just for my benefit, but so that people have a chance to see what I'm really capable of. I'm not just a comic doing fat jokes. In my life right now, I think I finally have a deep understanding of humanity and my soul. You're the genesis of that, Mom. And if you're the genesis, Dad's the Deuteronomy. I don't know what that means, Mom, but you gotta admit, Deuteronomy is a funny word. So I do my daily prayers, then I make some coffee, eat my food. Food doesn't become the most important thing to me. I try to make it more of a ritual than reward. Trying to run in a straight line, Louie. The hair twirlers. Hey, Mom, were you a hair twirler? Remember when Billy twirled his hair? I thought it was a weird habit, but lots of people do it. And here's my theory. Hair twirling isn't just a physical tick, but a mechanism to cope with the stress or the other upsetting things in our noggins. It's what you do when you can't tell the world what you're thinking. I'm so crazy. Nobody knows it but me. I wish I could get them to lower the lights in this room. I wish the phone would ring. I wish the phone would stop ringing. I'm crazy. Billy always twirled his hair. God, I miss him. He was a lovely human being. I had hair twirlers sitting in front of me on each of my last two flights. The woman in front of me on my flight to Omaha, on my way to perform at the Great American Comedy Festival in Norfolk, Nebraska, childhood home of Johnny Carson. She was a twirl and untwirl, twirl and untwirl, twirl and untwirl. I wonder what she was thinking. I wish I could get this flight to be over already, is my guess. Maybe she was thinking something else. Doesn't everyone know a hair twirler? If they don't, they should find one. The hair twirlers on my flight made it through okay. Thank God they had hair. What about the twirlers who happen to be bald? Do they twirl their children's hair? I wish Billy knew things would be okay, but he was afraid. He was paranoid. Who was trying to get him? Was Billy always a little different, Mom? No one knew it when they first met him. He was so good-looking, like one of the Kennedys. And people talked to him for a little while and probably went, okay. But then Billy would say something like, hey, man, those people over there are taking pictures of us. And one person he was talking to would say, but they don't even have a camera. And Billy would say, their glasses are cameras. Or he'd say, what are you looking at? And they were looking at nothing. Certainly not him. He loved adventure, hunted for golden diamonds. Then again, he could get upset over something, storm out, and not return for a couple of years. But if Billy were alive today, in this day and age, he'd probably be one of those people to invent the next big thing. He was a dreamer and a schemer. He gave me some of my best ideas. He wanted me to come out with Louie's Extra Sugar Louie Gooey Candies. Be sure to say extra sugar, Louie, he said. It's the extra that makes it. He was so right. William David Anderson, my brother Billy, hair twirler extraordinaire. Was I ever a hair twirler? I remember when I got really worried, I would take out a deck of playing cards, turn them over one by one, and if I got more aces and face cards than number cards, I felt better about things. How crazy is that, Mom? A queen, a jack. My day's gonna be just fine. I don't do cards anymore. Today I try to deal with my anxiety and insecurity by taking a deep breath and saying a prayer, and knowing that I'm strong enough and brave enough to handle anything that comes my way. Mom, you used to rub your right hand up and down on your left arm, probably to comfort yourself or to find something, your way of saying to yourself everything's going to be all right. When Dad would have one of his episodes, I remember you going to the kitchen sink, turning on the faucet, washing your hands, or sometimes you'd straighten and smooth the doilies on the sofa over and over, even if they were already as straight and smooth as could be. You know what, Mom? You were pretty much a hair twirler, too. Love, Louie. Finding Aura. Hey, Mom, we just started filming the first season of Baskets, and already it might be the most creative adventure of my life. Christine Baskets is pretty important to the show, and if this thing takes off, or at least holds on, I can honestly say it's not just me you're keeping in a job. It's other people in their jobs, too. Nice trick, considering you passed away a quarter of a century ago. Okay. I can see where that might sound big-headed. There are quite a few creative geniuses I'm working with who have a huge impact on what happens with our show. So how I got the job? Well, I've been in Vegas for about 11 years. I'm not sure if it's even 11. I'm terrible with dates. In fact, I often forget the birthdays and the birth years of so many of my sisters and brothers. Maybe it's forgivable when you have 10 to remember. I'm digressing again, Mom. Anyway, I moved there 10 or 11 years ago and got a job at the Excalibur Hotel and Casino in the old Catch a Rising Star showroom. For the next half decade, I did 5 or 6 shows a week there, then moved for 3 years to the Palace Station, playing at, what else, the Louis Anderson Theater, then headed downtown to the Plaza Hotel and Casino, where I'd been for about a year, when I was heading to work one day and my cell phone rang. Yes, Mom, people carry their cell phones with them. More on that later. It was my agent calling. He said that Louis C.K. needed my number. A couple minutes later, he called. Hey, Louis, said Louis. Hey, Louis, I said. I'm with Zach Galifianakis, he said. We're doing a new show and we'd like you to play a part. In less time than it takes to say yes, I said, yes! I didn't need to know what the part was, or the show. Zach Galifianakis is a great comic actor and an excellent serious actor, too. A creative genius. Mom, he looks like Billy with a beard. And Louis C.K.'s TV show had won a couple of Emmys and been nominated for many more. Then Louis told me, we want you to play Zach's mom. I immediately said, yes! Zach said when he was considering who he wanted to play the mother of his characters, he plays identical twins. The one thing he knew is that the mom made a nasal Midwestern sound, sort of like, which made Louis C.K. say, you mean like Louis Anderson? Yeah, like Louis Anderson, Zach said. Remember, Mom, how I said that sometimes I prayed for a job like this? Those prayers were answered. As soon as the call was over, I looked up and said, hey, Mom. What do you think? You're finally going to be in show business. I hope I do you justice. I was surprisingly calm about this call that might change my life and the challenge of the role. But I was Mr. Cool because, hey, in my act, I've been doing your voice and facial expressions forever, Mom. The idea of playing a woman didn't faze me at all. I grew up with 5 sisters. Once I played the maid in a scene with Dom Irrera for his comedy special, the only time I could remember playing in drag. But from what they had told me about Baskets, I didn't look at it as drag. The character would just be real. It was months before I got the call about shooting the pilot. I was given an address in Sylmar, That's California, Mom, in the valley. Anyway, I got there, and in a gigantic trailer, I put on the clothes that they had for me. I don't know if it was a skirt or slacks. It was still dark when I arrived, and I wasn't quite awake. TV and movie shoot hours are very different from live comedy show hours. After I got dressed, I went to another trailer. They put makeup on me, and then I moved over to the hair person, who put a wig on me, and then back to the makeup person, who put lipstick on me. There's something about putting lipstick on when you're facing the mirror, even if someone else applies it for you. You can't not purse your lips, kind of pucker them and say to yourself, maybe even out loud, "Hey, I look pretty good." To be honest, Mom, I was nervous as we took the shuttle van up to the set, which was kind of a cute ticky-tack row house. I'd already met the cast, the director, the writer, Zach, who's an exceptionally nice guy, Martha Kelly, a very talented stand-up comedian who's one of the main characters, Jonathan Kreisel, one of the show's co-creators and lone director. I love this script, and I'd been thinking a lot about how I was going to play Christine. Now, to Jonathan, who also seemed very sweet, I said, "Hey, I'm not going to change my voice for this character. My voice can get up there, but honestly, it's pretty deep." He thought about it for a moment. "Okay," he said. I was going to play this woman in my own voice because I wanted to do as little make-believe as possible. Throughout the filming of the pilot, Jonathan's direction was always smart, sensitive, and minimal. I could tell he had very specific things in mind, but he wouldn't ever push you to do it his way. He would never say a take wasn't good. He would say, "Why don't we try it?" And then he would give you a word or two that nudged you in a different direction. Sometime I would say to him, "Can I say it how my mom would?" He always said yes, and it seemed to always work the best that way, for everybody. I had so much fun playing this lovely mother. Christine Baskets actually has two sets of twins. The pair Zach plays, Chip and Dale, and an adopted pair, Cody and Logan. Not quite 11 children, but still a handful, even though they're supposedly grown-ups. Mom, you were pregnant with twins twice, but miscarried both times. That must have been so sad for you. I love you, Mom. I'm so sorry. Wow, that could have been 15 kids. Makes 11 look like child's play. Hey, Mom, remember the Wonder Bread store where we used to buy all the day-old bread, 10 loaves for a dollar? God, how crazy was that? Those cinnamon buns. Oh, I always wanted cinnamon buns and the cookies by the bin for a dollar. I love that. That was a real high for me. I can still smell those rolls and those cookies. Hold on. I gotta lie down for a minute. I'm kidding. Anyway, I bring it up because Costco. Mom, were they around and popular before you died in 1990? I'm not sure. I'll check. But they're a big box store chain, Mom. Did we use that phrase, big box store, when you were around? I don't know, I'll check. Anyway, Costco, which is like our gem store, the everything store, especially for veterans. Anyway, Costco, can I even go 30 seconds without breaking off for a tangent? Can I even be serious for 30 seconds? Well, what fun is that? Anyway, Costco let us, the Basket Show, use their Kirkland brand products in the kitchen. So the kitchen on the set was overflowing with cinnamon rolls, bread, just every delicious, fattening food that you could think of. And as soon as I walked into that kitchen, I thought of the day-old store. Was it a Wonder Bread store, Mom, or was it the gold medal flower store? I entertained the cast and crew with ways you might describe all that bread and those muffins and stuff courtesy of Kirkland and Costco. Remember how you used adjectives for food that are usually applied to works in a museum? Did you ever see a more beautiful muffin? How about those donut holes? Jeez, they're like pieces of art. Look at the swirl in the cinnamon toast. If it isn't a Picasso, I don't know what is. Then we filmed a whole scene about a Costco product. I was supposed to down a whole bottle of a Kirkland brand sports drink. I got about halfway through, and I knew I wasn't going to make it. So I spit some of it out and then tried to save the scene with an ad lib. Oh, I said, that was refreshing, or, oh, that hit the spot, something understated. And wouldn't you know it, they used that take in the pilot episode. I guess that's what they really mean in show business by a spit take. Sometimes mistakes make for the best scenes. After we shot the pilot, I heard nothing for a long time. I was really hoping to play the part again, but I didn't know if the show would get the green light. That's a Hollywood expression, Mom. It's also a traffic expression. Yes, our show had known comedy names attached to it, which really helps, but you never know with Hollywood, you don't. Then, one beautiful day, I got a call that FX Network had committed to a 10-episode season of Baskets. Yay! Thank you, FX. It's a bittersweet comedy. Jonathan calls it a slapstick drama. He's a genius, I think. Really special. I learned about complimenting people from you, Mother. You are the master at it. That's not to say I'm being insincere in what I just said about Jonathan. You made people feel better all the time. I keep that tradition going for you. I try to make people feel good. I ask the crew and other cast members real questions about themselves and their families and their partners and their careers and their hopes and their dreams. And I don't shy away from discussing hardships and disappointments. I would call you a super communicator, Mom. You really knew how to connect with people, and you pass that on to me. Thank you. Though I'm a big ham on top of it. You were funny too, Mom. Very funny, actually. At the beginning of the first season, Jonathan said something smart. Don't think of this as 10 episodes. Think of the whole season as a 3.5-hour movie. That gives it a sense of an arc, like it's moving towards something clear, not just going on and on, driven by ratings and how many seasons we get renewed. I wonder how many people look at their own lives as having an arc and live their lives accordingly. Given the built-in certainty of cancellation, we're all going to get canceled someday. We just don't know how many seasons we'll be around for. Baskets is scheduled to premiere early next year, but I'm not thinking about the reaction. I'm having too much fun. I love playing you, Mom. It feels so natural. Maybe it'll help me understand you even more and what you had to put up with. Love, Louie. One thing I really miss. Hey, Mom. Being in the kitchen with you when you were making something delicious. Oh, how great was that? Dad wasn't home yet. No one else was there. Well, maybe Lisa. She was always helpful. But often it was just you and me. You'd begin the ritual of taking all the vegetables out, cleaning them. I hate dirty celery, you'd say. Celery should be clean and crisp. You'd cut them precisely, each piece the size of knuckles, then wash the radishes, then cut them in half. You loved radishes. You loved good cucumber. Peel the cuke for me, Louie. You'd put them in the vinegar, cut up onions, and let them marinate. As delicious as they were then, when I think about them now, they seem even more so. Because the older we get, the more we like things pickled. Dad was always pickled, wasn't he, Mom? That was a good one, Louie. What a good laugh you had. You'd keep cutting vegetables and you'd purse your lips and your eyes would go up. The same expression Christine uses. It comes close to looking like exasperation, but it's not. It's satisfaction. It's approval. That was a good one, Louie. Then you'd say, Louie, grab the roast. Isn't that a gorgeous roast? I never thought a word like gorgeous applied to something like a roast, but you did. Maybe because you knew how to make anything beautiful and valuable. The way you made us feel safe no matter how much danger we were living in. The way you set the table. You'd think the president was coming over. Little salt dips for the radishes, oil and vinegar cruets, cloth napkins. If for no one else, Mom, at least it was for you. You found a way to live richly in poor conditions. High class all the way. I miss those little things, but now I don't really have to miss them because I reenact them on TV. Yes, I do. Love, Louie. Each parent got a book. Hey, Mom. We have a break in filming baskets, so I'm doing a